Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at ArmorAll.com. Armor All. Less work, more clean. Terms apply.
This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello everybody, welcome to another episode of the Hot Lap. Strange episode today. I'll be brutally honest with you, I wasn't gonna record an episode today because there hasn't really been a lot going on. I've been looking on like websites and stuff like that, trying to find something, and then we got the news early this afternoon that Frank Williams has sadly passed away. So it felt, I mean, this is just a small podcast that means essentially on the grand scheme of things means very, very little to only a few people. So it just felt odd not to do something given the fact that Frank has died. I thought all I could really do was say I started watching Formula One in 1994. So it's my love of Formula One was immediately wrapped into Williams, because my dad was a huge Formula One fan. I don't even know if I've ever told this story on the podcast. My dad was a huge Formula One fan, like loved it, lived, breathed and ate it, me, essentially, just without a vehicle to spout it out like I do. And, you know, it was different from my father when he was younger. You know, it wasn't televised live, and the only, it was like there was a time that it would start where you would get the race, pretty much how I watch it now, to be perfectly honest, with F1 TV, where I just tune in to the sessions, and I don't watch any of the nonsense that goes around it. But yeah, it was obviously a lot more difficult, like back in the 50s and 60s when my dad was watching it. But I remember I was sick. I was quite an ill child, and through my childhood, I was like, I had lots of days where I was sick. My mum and dad were separated, so Sunday was always a day I'd spend with my dad. It was that was my day with my dad, and he'd always take me out. And especially now, given how much I'm into Formula One, and the fact that I have my own son as well to try and like work around it. I just had no interest in Formula One whatsoever. So my dad would take me out every Sunday, and it was easier for him back then, obviously, because we obviously no smartphones, no mobile phones. Back when I was a child, and we would go out for the day, and he would make sure he turned the radio off when it came to news o'clock. He would make sure we didn't go in places that might have the radio on where when it was news o'clock, so he could get through the whole day without finding out who'd won the race, so he could watch the rerun later on at night. Yeah, and he did that for years. So, I mean, I was born in 82. The first race I ever watched was in 1994. So, you know, he did that for most of my childhood. And then this one Sunday, I wasn't feeling particularly well. I was in bed at my mum's house. And my dad came round, and we watched the 1994 San Marino Grand Prix. And obviously, infamous race. And I remember, I can't work it out quite now. My head maths aren't great. But all, I just thought Formula One was guys in cars driving around playing with each other. That's literally just what I thought. I thought it was just a game, that they were all just playing a big game. Didn't quite understand why, what excitement was there, because I didn't understand the danger of motor racing. Which is strange, to be perfectly honest, even for me as a child at that age, considering I live on the Isle of Man, where we've got the world's most dangerous motor race. I mean, maybe that's part of it. Maybe even as a child, we have an awful lot of car accidents on the Isle of Man. We have a terrible per capita accident rate. You know, it really is pretty fucking awful. And I've often wondered whether that's because we have even if people don't realize it, we have like a racing mentality baked into all of us, just because we have a strange relationship with death. Because I mean, don't get me wrong, there are places a lot more hard off than the Isle of Man. You know, we're a fucking tax haven at the end of the day. But we hold an event every year where we know people are going to die. We know that all the riders that come to the Isle of Man, some of them won't leave again. And it's a very strange thing, especially when you, I've got friends in the health service, and they would like, no, I mean, one of my best friend, he's a nurse, and he despises the TT. But when he was working in A&E, essentially come TT week time, he knew he was going to get a bunch of horrific trauma victims come into A&E, be it riders that were coming in, or people on holiday that just ran out of talent trying to throw their bike around the TT course, which vast parts of the TT course, TT week, or Mad Sunday, don't have a speed limit, so you always have a lot of accidents on Mad Sunday. I mean, how crazy is that? You know, open roads that go past people's houses, and we have a specific day where people just hoon around the streets. Very, very odd thing to grow up with, especially as you get older and you have a child and you go, fuck me, Christ, let's not go out on Sunday. That's Sunday, let's just stay in. It's like having a motorsport purge every year. But so I watched the San Marino Grand Prix with my father, and obviously Senna had his crash, and I can still remember it like it was yesterday, because my dad was obviously like, oh God, you know, he said straight away, he said he's dead, that he's just died. And Murray Walker, I remember the camera went on to Senna's car, and Senna's head sort of slumped over, and Murray Walker said something, I can't remember it verbatim, but he said, oh, it's okay, at least his head's moving. And my dad shouted at the TV, said, no, Murray, his head hasn't moved, he's just died. And I was really quite shaken by, first of all, seeing my dad so, like, excited is the wrong word, it's the right word, but you know what I mean, I don't mean joyously excited, I mean amped up at something that had happened. My dad was a big Mansell fan, but he had a lot of respect for Senna as well. And I remember waiting all day, watching the news reports to see what had happened to Ayrton Senna, see if he'd survived his crash. And then later on in the evening, when it came out that he died, I remember ringing my dad up and saying, oh, my Ayrton Senna died. And it just, like, I realized the risk that these people were taking. Like, literally, that incident changed them from being these guys that just drive around playing a game that I don't particularly understand to heroes and, like, modern day gladiators, if you want. So yeah, I watched every race then from that day. For the rest of the season, I watched every race with my dad. And it wasn't morbid curiosity. I don't want it to sound like that. It was, it was just a newfound respect for something people were doing. And then obviously like the my dad at the time, my dad is the same as me, where he'll support British, like whoever the British drivers are. And I've sort of developed that as well. You know, I want Lewis to do well. I want Lando and George to do well. You know, that's just where I am. I mean, as of next year, Albon as well. I know Albon races under the Malaysian side of his family, but he's still very much half British. So he's wholeheartedly got my support with the rest of them. So the next year I watched Formula One. Like I was ready. By the time I'd finished watching the rest of 1994, 1995, I was in. You know, I was asking my dad when the races were. I still didn't quite understand what was going on. You know, I had loads of questions about why things were happening, what was going on with pit stops, all that sort of stuff. And luckily enough, like I said, my dad was a pretty knowledgeable Formula One fan, so he was a good guy to have around to set me on the track I took. And then I really took a shine to Damon Hill. Like my dad supported Damon Hill. He came across as such a cool guy. You know, there's something charming about Damon Hill, but obviously he was in a Williams as well. So that was, you know, that was my team if I was supporting Hill. And obviously then like the end of that championship came a bit bad. So helping Lee get into Formula One more, not only did he have a hero and a team, he then had a villain in Michael Schumacher. And it just progressed from there. Of obviously 1996, Damon Hill win the world championship for Williams, which was cool. Then I was upset because fucking 97, Hill wasn't driving for Williams anymore. I felt they'd dumped him and left him out in the cold because he'd won a world championship, like they did with all their world champions, or very near all the world champions. And I can still remember like 97, even though Hill wasn't in a Williams anymore, I went to the British Grand Prix and I watched my first race at a circuit. The first cars I saw were on the Shakedown on Saturday, and I was at Copse on the inside of the corner, the inside of Copse Corner, when the pit straight was there. So obviously you had your pit lane exit. And the first car that came out was a Minardi. I can't remember who was driving the Minardi. And then all of a sudden Jacques Villeneuve came out in the Williams, and we had the big question mark on the side of it because you couldn't have cigarette advertising. And I looked at that car and I just thought, oh, that's it. That's the car. That's the height of motorsport technology right there. You know, obviously I was supporting Hill and he was in the Arrows and he wasn't doing particularly fucking well, but it was that seeing a Williams in the flesh and hearing it, like, because it had the Renault engine at the time, which was the best engine on the grid. It had such a high-pitched sound with those. What would have been a V8, I think, back then? Or were they V12s then? I can't remember. Maybe they were still V12s in 97. I'd have to go and look. I can't remember. And even then, when we were walking around the paddock and stuff like that, not the paddock, I wasn't that posh, walking around like the attractions for people, like, and the like where the merch and stuff was, there was much more back then. I think I don't know what it's like now. I haven't been to Silverstone for a while, but whenever I have been back to Silverstone, it was never quite as good as it was the first time I was there, when they had all that tobacco money to sponsor things. You know, there was so much stuff around. There was so many show cars. And I can just remember coming up to the Williams and just being fucking glued to this car. I'm sure Hill's 96 World Championship winning car was on display as well at the, like, around the Williams stuff. It would make sense. It was, I remember seeing that car somewhere. It would make sense. It was at Silverstone, obviously, because Hill had only been the world champion the year before. But yeah, like, that was kind of where I finished with Williams for a little bit, until when Pablo Montoya drove for Williams. And he was, because if you remember back then, I was never a huge Irvine fan. I enjoyed him. I enjoy anybody that's a bit mouthy in sport, but there hadn't been another British driver for me to jump on board with. And obviously you were having the beginning of the Ferrari Schumacher legacy being created, and I wasn't particularly down with that. I've never been a Schumacher fan, and even back then I always felt that Ferrari's advantage lay in Bridgestone making the tyres for them more than the maestro himself, as the late Murray Walker would have said. And I was happy when Montoya came in, because all of a sudden, you know, you had Williams BMW, where Williams had like a factory engine supplier again. Montoya had all this noise made about him when he came into Formula One, and he'd come from IndyCar, where he'd been really successful, and there was something fucking raw about Montoya. And I was it. Montoya was my guy then, and I was back as a Williams guy with Montoya. Obviously, that would be short-lived, and it wouldn't. It proved some exciting moments, but it wouldn't. It would never give Montoya the championship I personally think he deserved in Formula One. And then again, I would drop off Williams until Jenson Button came in, and I was back with Williams again, because Button, I don't know. I know he's a year older than me, but I don't know whether it's like a full year or just like 8 months or something like that. But I remember thinking to myself, oh, he's so close to my age. And it was the same with Alonso, which we came in later. And that's why I think it must be cool for people with Max Verstappen, because I had the same thing. Yeah, and it must be even more amazing when you're a young teenager. You're 17 and like someone like Max Verstappen comes into Formula One. You think, fuck me, I'm going to school. This guy's a Formula One driver. And yeah, it must be so good for the sport. It must be so good for getting young people in. But yeah, but again, I was back on board with Williams. Jensen was in the car. They had the Brabham colours. The car looked great. It was a good car as well. You know, it was a good car. It was enough to let people like push. I think was Jacques Villeneuve back at Williams? We're still at Williams then, or was it Ralph Schumacher? I can't remember who. I remember Button faring well to his teammate. I think it might have been Jacques. I think did Jacques move after that year to BAR, and then. I can't remember. I really can't remember what the moves were. But back on board with Williams again. And then obviously I've then followed Jenson Button through his career. And then up to present day, where Williams brought through George Russell. Well, obviously Toto brought George Russell through, but you know, he got his seat with Williams, and we've seen George outperform in a pretty bad Williams. There's been some criticism towards the Williams team in the past. You know, the beginning of the hybrid era has kind of been their highlight for a long time, which I still don't think Williams really capitalized on, more to the drivers than the car. Bottas has proven to be a B team, like a very good second driver, but a second driver nevertheless. Williams' main driver was Felipe Massa, which was a broken Felipe Massa, which wasn't great. But yeah, it's a shame that team, you know, obviously I was very critical, and we still would be very critical. You know, somebody's death doesn't change my criticism towards Frank Williams' daughter being put in position to manage the team. I still believe that might have been the death of the team, especially when you employ somebody like Paddy Lowe and it doesn't work out. You know, that's a shame. But you can't deny what Frank brought to the sport. Will we ever really see somebody like Frank Williams again in Formula One? Probably not. I mean, maybe if these rules and budget caps and stuff like that can try and push it back to the point where a privateer team can come in. You know, I know they are well funded, but I don't think Red Bull quite get the plaudits they deserve, because they're an independent team. They are, again, well financed. But back in 1996, when Williams was winning world championships, they were well financed compared to other teams as well. And Red Bull are Williams now. You know, they would be one step further down the road of Williams when they start making their own engines as well, which is pretty fucking crazy. But yeah, I don't believe that Red Bull quite get their just desserts for being the independent team in a formula which has been very much pulled away from independent teams. You know, you can be an independent team like a Stroll having Aston Martin, but at the end of the day, if you want to be competitive, you have to be wrapped up with a manufacturer. You know, I think maybe these rules change that, but you can see it with like McLaren, for instance, where I do think they have a ceiling with as an engine partner with Mercedes. So again, who knows what the new rules are going to do? But yeah, I just thought it would be a nice thing to do, to come on, have a talk about that. There's nothing else really to talk about, to be perfectly honest. I've got very, very little to say about it. But it just felt bad not to come on and do some sort of podcast, considering what Frank Williams has given to the sport and how long it was to his life. You know, that's the thing about somebody like Frank. His life has been Formula One. You know, that must be such a strange thing. You know, Formula One is a dream to most people, just to be involved in it, just to work in it. You know, from the people that mop the floor at the McLaren Technology Center to the to the mechanics working on the car, to David Coulthard and fucking Mick Asalo, whoever you want to think of. You know, it's at the end of the day, if you were a caretaker, would you rather be a caretaker for Williams Racing, or would you rather be a caretaker for Tesco Express? You know, there's something. It doesn't matter what your position is in Formula One. If your position is worth more than your position somewhere else, if it happens to be in that fraternity. So to have that as your entire life must be crazy. Genuinely must be crazy. I mean, you consider as well, you know, he had the crash, he lost the use of his legs, still there, still part of the team. I remember there was that time where he had that vertical plank thing that he used to sort of be strapped into, so he still looked like he was stood up when he was there. And I remember there was an interview with him where he was asked, where of all drivers, which driver would he want? And he had this, you know, a man that he must have been in his 70s then, and he had such a schoolboy grin on his face when he was asked, oh, if you could have any driver, who would you have? And he said, oh, I'd like Lewis Hamilton to drive a Williams. And the interviewer said, why would you like him to drive a Williams? And he said, he's just got it, hasn't he? And you could just see that passion that was still in a man. You know, it's energizing, it's wonderful, and it's something that you think, you know, even up to this year when he was asked about going to different races, He was asked whether he'd be able to travel to races. He said, "I don't see why not." He said, "I'm paralyzed, but yeah, I'm still healthy," and he still wanted to do it. And to be perfectly honest, you wonder, you know, I'm sure when you're in that position, you're going to die. You think about your family and stuff like that. But you can bet that he was also thinking that one of the things he'll miss would be watching Formula One, even if he couldn't be there. You know, it's very sad. I'm not usually one for these type of shows, because I always feel that it might come across like you're trying to make content out of something, but it's absolutely not what I'm trying to do. I've seen some videos on YouTube and stuff already. And I thought, oh, fuck off! You're just doing this for fucking views. But I felt that it would have been out of place. But podcast wise, you know, I started doing podcasts because of Formula One. I started doing podcasts with Three Legs, Four Wheels. And I still love doing Three Legs, Four Wheels, but there was something else I wanted to do. I wanted to do a slightly shorter show that was more just like your friend. I wanted to be your friend in a pub that happens to know a little bit too much for like Formula One for it to be cool. You know, when people know a little bit too much about something, you go, that's a bit fucking, it's interesting, but Jesus, you really like that stuff, don't you? And that's how I see Hot Lap as just being your mate in the pub, that if ever you want to go and talk to about Formula One, you know, you can just walk up to him and you go, "Did you see the race?" And so they go, "Oh yeah, fucking, who'd have thought fucking Haas were going to get a 1-2? No one's ever going to say that. But I just thought it was the right thing to do. That's all I was going to say. So rest in peace to Frank Williams. He's given an awful lot to this sport. And I'm not sure we will ever see the likes of him again. I'd never thought about this before, but if I could ask three questions you could ask Frank Williams, I would like to ask him who he thinks is the greatest driver of all time. I'm fairly convinced he'd say it in Senna, but it would be nice to know. What was his biggest regret in Formula One? And I'd also like to know what he thinks of modern day principles in Formula One. I'd love to know what he feels about the Horner Toto bitch battles. That would be really good to know. But anyway, thank you. This has been the tribute show, I suppose. If you like, there was a couple of other bits of news I could have talked about. I was even going to do a talking points thing, but again, it just felt like I was trying to build a show that wasn't there when there was something else to talk about. So I will be back next week after the next Grand Prix. I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be a titanic battle between Lewis and Max on a circuit they don't know. I have a funny feeling Mercedes are going to be able to edge this. We'll just have to see what happens. Until then, keep whatever you want to keep. Follow me on Twitter at @TotalShunt, and we can talk about things, be it the world, Formula One, or Power Rangers. And until then, I'll see you soon. Goodbye.
Find more great shows or join the team at sport-social.co.uk. Network.